Nason versus Gonzalez.
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Edwin Gagne on behalf of the petitioner, Daniel Nason. This immigration case presents the issue of whether a motion to reconsider was improperly reclassified by the Board of Immigration Appeals into a motion to reopen, which was then subject to summary dismissal as being time-barred and number-barred. The facts presented in this case are rather unusual and compelling. Within the motion to reopen period, a motion was filed based on the Board's decision in matter of Velarde, where an alien who is married to a U.S. citizen may petition to reopen his proceedings based on a pending I-130 petition, rather than a petition that is already approved.
But, Mr. Gagne, it seems to me that the best you could say was that your motion was mixed, because your motion definitely did rely on new evidence in the form of the newly granted I-130 petition. That was not, I mean, that was your whole point. That wasn't there before. Now, maybe you were then taking that new evidence and kind of arguing backward from it, saying this cast old evidence in a new light. But new evidence will always do that, right? It's additional evidence. It changes the texture of a record. And it's hard for me to see how the Board, faced with something that's a little bit of both and very significantly dependent on the new evidence, isn't within its right to characterize this as a motion to reopen.
But we dispute that the approval of the petition constitutes new evidence.
And it was a centerpiece of your motion.
Yes, it's the whole basis of the motion to begin with, the motion to reopen to begin with. And really it also constitutes new legal authority. It's the government saying that the second marriage was bona fide, and legal authority that in order to say that, the first marriage could not have been fraudulent. So most cases would present just new facts that are not so germane to the entire process. And if anything, it's a hybrid new fact. It's a fact that is partially law and partially a new fact underlying the motion.
But, you know, in a sense, all motions to reopen are asking the Board, in a colloquial sense, to reconsider the earlier outcome. They present reasons why the Board allegedly should come out the other way. It's just that the Board draws a distinction between, you know, and the Court has respected that distinction between a motion to reopen and a motion to reconsider. And at a rough cut, that distinction is, are you giving the Board something new, or are you just pointing out to the Board something that it overlooked in the old record?
That's true, but also here it's so unusual in that the new evidence or new law relates so clearly to the basis for denying the motion. The government was saying that they're opposing the motion because there was fraud with regards to the first marriage. Well, they're really saying then that the second petition would not be approved because of that first fraud.
But, you know, I guess you didn't think you had grounds to overcome either the timeliness or the numerical limit on additional motions to reopen. Had there not been such limits, that's certainly what you would have brought, right?
Yes.
Yeah,
that's correct.
So isn't this kind of an end run around those limits?
Well, but where the rules are so limited, where there are so few ways to reopen removal proceedings, I think it behooves this Court to give a more liberal interpretation. You know, the rights involved here are very drastic. It involves removal of an individual back to his country. And, you know, if you have an analogy to the criminal context, I mean, imagine exculpating evidence coming to light after a plea of guilty. Well, the Court would have a way to reconsider that evidence. It wouldn't be called new evidence. It would be considered by the Court and fully addressed. And I believe the respondent should have the same rights here. Should I continue?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. This motion would have been more or less routine, but for the fact of the first marriage, that there's a petition arising out of that marriage which was denied on the basis of alleged fraud. Now, we contend that there really was no fraud with regards to that first marriage. The decision giving rise to that conclusion was, we feel, neither supports that conclusion or provides any evidence. Literally, it was only four sentences in that decision that talked about the fraud. Two of those sentences really contradict each other. So this tainting of this alien with an allegation of fraud really was highly unfair and prejudicial. When there's an allegation of fraud, then a second petition may not be approved. Under INA Section 204C, a second petition may not be approved if the first petition was deemed to be fraudulent. So on that basis, the board denied the motion to reopen. Just 4 days after the decision, the second petition was approved. Now, had that petition been approved during the pendency of the motion, then the board would have been all but compelled to grant the motion. Now, I guess I must inform the court that the second petition has since been the subject of a notice of intent to revoke. Just 2 weeks ago, we received notice that they'd like to review the issue of fraud in the first petition. However, we feel that we can address that that concern. As it stands now, the second petition remains approved, subject to a determination.
What about the facts in this case, though, in the sense that he married in 2004 and divorced in October of 2005 and remarried in December of 2005? Does that prove anything one way or the other?
In terms of whether there might be...
With regard to fraud.
Well, those facts actually were never addressed by the CIS. They do look a little bit questionable in terms of timing, but we certainly prove that the second marriage is real. No one ever questioned that this marriage is real. It does look kind of strange, but it happened in this case. And there's proof to prove that the marriage is real. And we're going to address the concerns of the CIS with regards to the first marriage. Now, turning to the motion to reconsider itself, the motion must direct the board's attention to a defect in the decision and be supported by pertinent authority. So as I said before, we feel that the defect was the fact that there was no fraud in the first marriage. That was not a legitimate basis to oppose the motion. And the pertinent authority being the decision of CIS, basically saying that that because the petition was approved, there could have been no fraud in the first petition.
Could you have made that argument about the finding of fraud in the first petition without in any way addressing the I-130 grant? I mean, if you had just left all information about the later grant of the petition based on the second wife's application, is there any way you could have said to the board, you just got it wrong on the fraud? Was there evidence in the record that it might or might not have reconsidered?
Well, that's what we pointed out in the motion, that there really was no evidence to support.
All right, but actually that says that you really needed this new evidence of the I-130 in order to persuade the board to rethink its earlier outcome.
Because that stood as proof positive that there could not have been fraud in the first case. It was just such compelling proof that had to be brought to the attention of the board. And what are we to do with an approved petition? Somehow hide it and play a cat and mouse game?
No.
Okay.
But it's relevant or not, depending how you... It may have been a fact, but there are plenty of facts out there in the world that aren't relevant to particular applications. And I just don't see how that can be part of your motion without the board having the discretion to characterize it as a motion to reopen. But we'll see what the board says.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. McManus?
Thank you, Your Honor, and good morning. May it please the Court, Keith McManus on behalf of the respondent, Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. Your Honor, I think it's important as an initial threshold matter to point out that the Court's review in this case is limited to the Board's denial of petitioners. We'll call it a motion to reconsider, but obviously the Board construed it differently. But it seems that petitioner is keen on collaterally attacking CIS or DHS's underlying finding of fraud and then the board's subsequent denial of his motion to reopen based on matter of Velarde. Neither of those matters are properly before the court because petitioner never filed a petition for review of the two previous board decisions, first dismissing his initial appeal and then denying his prior motion to reopen. So the court must narrow its focus here specifically to the denial of the motion to reconsider. And I think, as Judge Wood points out, the board did not abuse its discretion in construing that motion as it did, where, as petitioner's counsel admits, the motion itself was primarily based on the introduction of new and previously unavailable evidence, that being the approved visa petition. So the only question is whether the board acted arbitrarily or rationally in construing the motion, as it did in this case, as one requesting reopening, and therefore properly denied it as both time and number barred. And here the government's position is simply that that was not an abuse of discretion. As the court has recognized, the board has wide latitude in interpreting its own regulations and the INA. And here, because, again, petitioner's motion was primarily premised on this introduction of new evidence, the board properly and reasonably construed the motion as a motion to reopen rather than as a motion to reconsider.
Mr. McManus, I have a question for you. There is now this, we just learned, a notice of intent to revoke on the second I-130. Suppose at the end of the day there is no revocation. You know, the board looks at it and decides this was all fine, it was a bona fide marriage, you know, whatever reasons, you know, it decides not to. How then, if at all, can Mr. Nissan adjust his status based on that new petition? Does he have to, in your view, does he have to leave and then come back when the visa comes up, or is it somehow not possible?
That is certainly one option, Your Honor. He certainly can adjust from abroad, assuming at the end of the day, if, for instance, the revocation does not go through, and after all administrative proceedings have been completed, he stands with an approved I-130. You know, assuming this current removal order is affirmed, he can then adjust from abroad through the consular's office. As an alternative, and interesting to point out in this case, he could have, somewhere along the way, even before the case made it to the court, could have asked DHS to join in a motion to reopen. And that actually would have been his first avenue of relief at the time he received notice that the visa petition had been approved. But he failed to do that. And in fact, the government, Office of Immigration Litigation, has been in touch with the Department of Homeland Security and asked whether they would be amenable to exercising their prosecutorial discretion. And obviously, right now, we don't know what's going to happen with the revocation, but based on the evidence before it, this initial finding of marriage fraud in particular, DHS is not willing to join in a motion at this time. So although that avenue of relief was previously available to petitioner, he failed to pursue it. And at this time, DHS has sort of foreclosed that opportunity. But as you point out, Your Honor, he can adjust from abroad.
Who is the decision maker, and what materials, evidence, submissions does that decision maker rely on in this approving the second?
You're talking about the visa petition, Your Honor?
Yeah, the second one.
Whoever's
approving it, what does that person know?
Well, it's unclear exactly what that person knew in this case, Your Honor, because the evidence relating to the very first visa petition is not in the record. The submissions that Mr. Nissan would have given to, it's the district director of CIS, that division of DHS, which of course is separate from ICE. It just handles the enforcement side. But the CIS district director is the official who renders those decisions. So presumably Mr. Nissan submitted to CIS a packet of evidence indicating the bona fides of that first marriage. And that would have been anything from, you know, lease agreements or evidence of joint property and co-ownership, joint bank accounts, those types of things to that would sort of evidence a bona fide marriage. Again, that stuff isn't in the record.
I think we're all assuming here then that somebody looked at this and made a determination that the second petition should be granted. And that would seem to be, at least inferentially, an acknowledgement that the first marriage was not fraudulent.
Well, Your Honor, what is in the record, first of all, is the notice of intent to deny and the reason CIS gave for denying that first visa petition. And you're right, petitioner makes the argument that presumably, if that visa petition was properly denied in the first instance, no further or future visa petition should have been approved. So in that sense, it seems that somewhere along the way, either CIS or DHS made some sort of error, presumably the documents were reviewed, but nevertheless, apparently this does happen where things slip through the cracks and subsequent visa petitions are approved where statutorily they probably should not be. And, Your Honor, the notice of intent to revoke suggests, however, that DHS has now caught its own mistake and indicates in its notice that the initial finding of...
I mean, I asked the question because are we sure that the decision maker on this second visa petition even knows about any of these underlying things, knows about the first marriage? The wife, who's an American citizen, files the visa petition request. And I guess I haven't seen one of those. I don't know what it says, what kind of information is disclosed. She says, I want to marry this fellow from Syria. I have married him. And,
well, Your Honor, presumably, without any evidence to the contrary, the district director does review all of the evidence submitted to him and makes a decision accordingly. But
does the form ask for information about any prior I-130 petitions?
The form for a subsequent visa petition?
Well, when you submit an I-130 form, does it say, have you ever submitted this form before? Or has anyone on your, you know, has anyone on behalf of this alien ever submitted such a form before, to your knowledge?
Your Honor,
anything like that?
Your Honor, unfortunately, I don't have a solid working knowledge of the actual forms that DHS uses, and unfortunately there isn't one in the record. If you notice, though,
But the reason I'm asking is getting at what Judge Evans is talking about. Is there any systematic way that the officer who reviewed wife number two's application would have of knowing that anything had ever happened before?
Well, you would assume, Your Honor. It seems like, again...
Why would I assume that if it's not asked on the application anywhere?
My understanding, I mean, Your Honor, is that the process, if CIS handles these applications, that there would be some record within their files that this particular alien had a visa petition approved on his behalf or denied on his behalf previously, and that would sort of dictate...
So does the application, like, give his number or something? I mean, how does CIS do that?
Any documents relating to a particular alien will contain his A number.
His A number, okay.
Well, and the only difference in this case would be that the first visa petition, of course, would be filed by the wife.
Right.
So here CIS has two documents relating to petitioner but from two different women. Again, Your Honor, I can't account for what happened in this case and why CIS might not have recognized that the subsequent visa petition should have probably been denied in the first instance, never approved. And now they're, again, at least presumably trying to correct their mistake by revoking that petition. But again, Your Honor, I go back to my initial point, which is none of this is properly before the court. You know, the interpretation that the board gave in this case to the motion itself is the only thing on review. And the court need only ask itself whether the board acted arbitrarily or irrationally, and in this case reasonably, when it construed petitioner's motion as a motion to reopen rather than as a motion to reconsider.
This was at the initial phase of the reorganization, too, wasn't it?
There was some crossover, Your Honor, with transition from old INS to DHS. But, again, I can't, unfortunately, without more in the record, I can't account for exactly what happened. But we would hope that, recognizing that it's outside the scope of this particular record, the notice of intent to revoke should be indicative of DHS's efforts to correct its mistake if it made one, and also more to the point, they're still relying on the fact that petitioner's initial visa petition was approved because of a finding of marriage fraud, and at no point along the way has Mr. Nassan presented any evidence to rebut that finding. There are no further questions, Your Honor.
Thank you. Counsel. You have 1 minute, counsel, for rebuttal.
Thank you. Just a couple of points. First of all, the I-130 form does ask for the previous marriages of the beneficiary, and certainly we were aware that we had this issue to address. We presented evidence regarding the first marriage. We have detailed affidavits of both parties explaining the first marriage. So,
Is the I-130 form filed by the second wife in the record of this case?
I believe it is. Yes.
Okay. That's fine.
Then the second point is regarding the petitioner's ability to adjust status outside the United States. Once he departs the United States, he's barred for 10 years from returning on two different grounds, one by the immigration court and the final order of removal, the second by having accrued more than 1 year of unlawful presence in the United States. So he would require two separate waivers in order to return to the United States on an immigrant visa. And those waivers are very difficult to come by. And the last point is regarding the apparent opportunity to apply for seek a joint motion to reopen with DHS. There really was no such opportunity. That was indicated by the opposition of DHS to our motion to reopen and the motion to reconsider. There's no way they would turn around from that opposition and say, oh, yes, we will agree to reopen. Thank you.
Thanks to both counsel. The case will be taken under advisement.